When Pat and Jacob asked me to do the podcast intro, I hesitated, since my livelihood in a public-facing job at a Catholic church hinges upon me staying closeted and not advocating for LGBTQ plus acceptance in our church. And you know, I respect and admire LGBTQ plus people who could serve quietly in the church without stirring the pot. But for me, it's time. I have to speak up and speak out, knowing that it will cost my job one day. Even if you don't know my name, you can know my story as yet another devoted Catholic gay person on the margins of a church that we have served so dearly. I have to speak up, because just last week, I was invited on a national Catholic radio show, playing the part of good Catholic boy, saying what everybody wanted to hear. Thousands of listeners not knowing the truth about my greatest suffering and my greatest gifts. And the week before that, I was given an opportunity to speak to a group of young men about self-acceptance and coming of age as a man. And I knew that some men in the crowd, just like me, were gay at that age, and just like me, desperately searching for a clean-cut definition that would explain their crisis of sexuality caused by a homophobic church. But I couldn't be honest to them either, not while my livelihood depends on me bowing to an unjust system just to put food on the table. But I have to speak up, and I'm grateful for this community to do so, even in this discreet fashion, because it's progress for me. Because I'm not the only one to have suffered decades of the Catholic version of conversion therapy, brought to me by 100 hours of coursework in the conservative theology of the body, 15 to 20 charismatic healing retreats, a decade of weekly therapy, 6 weeks of inpatient psychological treatment, a bookshelf full of attempts to heal what never needed to be healed. An attempt at celibacy via seminary. Heartbreak after heartbreak, falling for my straight friends in a straight world. And a whole lot of compulsive, anonymous sexual behavior, craving healthy intimacy. This is the heavy cross that I was told I was to carry for my intrinsic disorder. This was God's will for me as a so-called sinner striving for holiness in the Catholic Church. But then came that blessed rock bottom, when I was finally miserable enough to let myself feel love for the first time from a fellow Catholic boy who tried and failed at seminary celibacy just like me. Our intimate companionship was things like working out almost daily, long endearing hugs, talking late at night about life and God, listening to praise and worship, and Kesha. We both even tried, at the same time, to date girls. Spoiler alert, didn't work out. But our companionship was so pure, so innocent, that my arguments of an intrinsic disorder paving my way to hell simply failed. He and I have since gone our separate ways, and that heartbreak was the worst pain and the most relief I had ever felt. Today, he's in this very online community, perhaps smiling ear to ear, hearing what I'm saying as I smile ear to ear speaking it. And so today, having come out to family, friends, and those that matter most to me, I am happier than I have ever been. and I am here. And I am holy, and I am gay, and I am a disciple of Jesus Christ. I am coming out of the closet, and I can't wait to be free of all of the burdens that Christ never intended for me to carry. And one day, we will all be free. Welcome to Tabard Inn, everybody.
Story was by a Vine and Fig community member.
Welcome to Tabard Inn, y'all, a weekly podcast about the stories we tell and the events we discuss while on pilgrimage as queer Catholics. I'm Pat Gothman. I am a cradle Catholic from the suburbs, and I've learned to love being gay and using the intellectual tradition I was raised with to push for a more inclusive church.
And I'm his fiance, Jacob Flores. I'm a cradle gay.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
We love a good cradle gay.
a gold star gay. And a newbie baby to the Catholic faith. And I hope to bring, I don't know, my unaffected homosexuality to the church.
Can you still smell the chrism on your forehead from when you were baptized? Does it still linger at all? How long did that last?
It didn't last. I think probably because I burned so much incense and candles here at the
in the apartment.
House. Yeah, that it just kind of blends. I always smell like chrism.
That beautiful Catholic aroma is always in the apartment as well.
So what do we have on the podcast today, Pat?
Well, up first, we're going to take a look at the Catholic High School in Los Angeles, where students formed a walkout over treatment of a lesbian student there. Then we'll talk about the American Psychological Association endorsing the use of they-them singular pronouns. Then we'll celebrate the TV show One Day at a Time, coming back for another season after being canceled. And finally, we'll talk about the virtue of prudence and how it can help us in everyday life.
So students at Bishop Amat Memorial High School in Los Angeles staged a walkout on Friday. This was after senior Magali Rodriguez was singled out by school officials who threatened to out her to her parents and also made her attend disciplinary meetings and counseling and also, get this, forbid her from sitting with her girlfriend at lunch. Rodriguez transferred to another school when her parents found out she was being treated by the Bishop Amat staff this way. But when students learned what had happened, about 200 of them staged a walkout in support of Rodriguez. One student said this, "I decided to walk out because I wanted to take a stand. I didn't agree with what the administration did with the situation, and I feel it was a good idea for the student body to stand as one to show our support for Magali."
So I want to start with what happened to Magali, this student, which is horrendous. Like, it's abhorrent on a bunch of levels. You've got the way that the staff was treating her and basically just saying you have to go to counseling, like there was no free will or decision, or like, is this something that you want? It's a service we can help provide as a Catholic school. Like, it was just, we are going to try and fix you. There is the fact that they were threatening to out her to her parents, which is like,
yeah,
that's an extraordinary thing to A, use it as a threat, and then B, to apparently not be communicating with the parents about these disciplinary measures that they were taking, and then also not allowing her to sit with her girlfriend at lunch, like just to feel like you are constantly being watched, like you are constantly having this strong Catholic school presence, every administrator looking over your shoulder and judging your every movement has to be so humiliating and demeaning, especially to be going through in high school. Like, I can't imagine how painful that must have been for her.
For the school to treat her like a criminal, I think is just outright horrendous.
Yeah, basically like a criminal. It's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Their tactics are, their tactics seem a lot like, what do they call it? Ex-gay therapy? I'm sorry, I'm blanking on the term.
Yeah, certainly that I don't want to put any, we don't know what went on in these therapy, you know, kind of counseling sessions. So exactly what the high school was trying to do within them, I'm not sure. But the lack of transparency and the emphasis on it being a forced thing, like that to me is
and
is
being
similar
carefully
to those
watched.
Tactics. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, definitely. And it makes you, especially at a young age like that, in high school where you're supposed to be having fun and really transforming into the bad self that you are to be.
Right.
I could see that being a really terrifying experience, and being as young as, 16, 17 years old, making you want to change your mind.
Yeah, and I'm grateful that when the article stated that when her dad did find out about this, he immediately scheduled an appointment with the school, was extremely disappointed, yeah. and they pulled her out of that school and said, absolutely, we're not continuing this education, even though she was about to go into her senior year. So I feel horrible that this happened at a Catholic school, which should have such higher standards for the way that it treats its queer members, let alone all of its students.
Catholic school or not, secular or not, the parent should be involved.
Right.
But it's weird. You don't want to out the student to the parents, but also if you're going to leave the parents out of the picture,
If there's going to be disciplinary sketchy, measures, yeah. the parents sure as hell better be involved.
I think, this isn't a new thing. I've talked about this before on previous podcasts. It's been happening for several years now, from what I remember. But students are walking out in response to students being reprimanded and being put in counseling for being gay and open about it, or for staff that are being outed and being fired for being gay or in a same-sex relationship. If all students, doesn't matter how many, if students are walking out in reaction to this, shouldn't bishops be listening to this and seeing this as what the children, not the children, but what the kids, the young adults in the church feel?
I should hope so. And that's definitely, like you're saying, that is a theme now with all of these controversies that are basically weekly coming out in Catholic high schools around gay issues, is that there's always a backlash now within the school itself, whether it's another teacher coming out in support or it's students stepping up and saying that it's something that they don't want going on at their school. Like there's a sense of conscience going on within the school that says, even though this is coming down from the top, from the bottom up, this is how the school is actually reacting to this situation and to this perspective on its queer members within the school community. So I sure hope that the bishops take note. And I'm grateful. I'm given a lot of hope by 200 students walking out in the middle of class and saying, even though this student has, Magali has moved on to another school, like, we want the administration to know that we won't stand for that going on and we won't allow our fellow students to be treated like that. So yeah. I'm grateful for that.
Same. And I understand that the church is supposed to be an institution that doesn't change with the world that changes around it. I get that perspective and all, but honestly, change is what's needed. And if the young adults are speaking out loud about this, the bishops need to listen to this.
Yeah, I think they need to examine whether or not this is just change for change on sake, like a sense of trendiness, or is this change because finally they're starting to see and listen to the victims of the lack of change, of that status quo. And is there any attempt to see, like, was she healthier? Was she happier when she was with, a girlfriend and actually allowed to express herself and her sexuality instead of just being repressed and shut down in counseling and having someone watching over her back? Like, which high school experience did she actually thrive under? Well, the American Psychological Association officially endorsed the use of they, them singular pronouns, essentially making them valid medical and academic standards in everything from medical journals to everyday use with patients. The APA style blog, which sets grammatical standards for psychological journals, not only suggested the use of the singular they, but also mandated it, saying, quote, "If you are writing about a person who uses they as their pronoun, then yes, you have to use it. Respectful and inclusive language is important, and it's part of the APA style."
I think this is great. For a few years now, I've been using they, them just reflexively.
As your standard go-to.
As my standard go-to, especially at work. So I work in a tech company, and we have a lot of international employees with Asian names.
Okay.
Being in America, being raised here, I'm not privy to gender identities or gender...
Yeah, what the standard for that name, whether it's
a male or female.
A male or female, yeah. Name.
And so I revert to they.
Right.
I got a lot of pushback on that for a while because people would immediately assume that I'm talking about multiples. But I'm thinking, like, if this specific instance that I'm working on only has to do with one person and I'm using they, them, you should just understand that I'm using
You're
it
not
as,
suddenly bringing in a bunch of other yeah, exactly. people to the conversation.
So there's a part of me that feels like I don't completely understand why it would be so hard to accept a new standard of using they, them as a non-binary, but also just a gender non-conforming approach. But I do understand when people are so used to using the gender binary of male, female, she, him. So I think it's just a matter of getting people started and then understanding that it's really not that hard. But beyond all of that, respecting someone's non-gender conformity, and if they use the pronouns they, them, we should use those.
Yeah, I respect the idea that it's hard, that there are old habits, and especially for folks who have not lived in maybe a progressive city or yeah. in areas or in industries where some of this stuff is already moving forward, it can seem daunting and new and a bit unnecessary. But it's the unnecessary part that I don't have a whole lot of sympathy for, because it's somebody's own perspective and identity. And just because you haven't lived it doesn't mean you get to define it for
exactly.
them. And so I think my favorite, kind of comeback to that perspective of, oh, it's too hard, why would we go through that, is just pointing out like how many folks are able to default to they, them, or even asking for somebody's pronouns when it's their dog. And you don't know what the gender is of the dog, just like being like, oh, is it a boy, girl, or a girl dog? And being able to just ask and not assume that you know is something that a lot of folks are already really used to. And not to equate gender non-conforming people or non-binary people with dogs, but to say that there are areas in everyday life that a lot of folks are already used to assuming that they don't know an animal's pronouns. So why can't you take that step and say, I'm willing to respect a person enough mm-hmm. to also say, hey, what are your pronouns?
Yeah. So jumping off of that dog topic.
Yeah.
So it's funny when you come across a dog that's super cute on the street and you're like, oh, what's his name? What's her name? Say you just assume it's a he.
Sure.
And the owner would be like, no, it's a she. And they'd get really offended. It's the same thing. If you don't
right.
subscribe to he or she, but you are non-conforming and you go by they or them, why wouldn't we do the same thing for them?
Yeah, and why not understand why it would be frustrating
exactly.
for them to feel misgendered in the same way that, like, if you can get offended on behalf of your dog, you can get offended on behalf of your coworker. You yeah. can be offended on behalf of somebody that you're reading an article about or seeing online.
It's really not that hard, y'all.
Right.
Just try.
I will say there's a lot of this is coming from the American Psychiatric Association. When they came out with an update to the DSM, the Diagnostics and Statistics Manual of Mental Disorders, which is like the psychiatric Bible, basically. And they took homosexuality out of it in 1970, a lot of Catholics lost their minds. And it to this day, like when I was going through formation in seminary, that was pointed to as being like a seminal event in society when we had given in to the impulses of secular change and, you know, given up on promoting traditional values in society. And, in 2009, they were still teaching us in university about how taking homosexuality out of the DSM was a pivotal moment in American society. I hope that those same Catholics are able to take this moment with at least a little bit of humility and grace and be able to say, well, why is it? Like, what is the science behind it? Because I promise the APA, the American Psychiatric Association, they're not going to make this decision without some science behind it. It's not going to be based off of political correctness. So, like, listen a little bit before you get on a high horse about this decision being made.
Professor, is this an MLA or APA?
This is an APA. Thank you very much for noticing.
Okay, so on the topic of one of Pat's favorite shows here.
Come on, hit it.
The beloved TV show One Day at a Time is coming back after being canceled by Netflix. Following a Cuban-American family in Los Angeles, One Day at a Time dealt seriously with issues of race, class, misogyny, faith, and sexuality, all while keeping a sense of humor. When the daughter Elena comes out as gay, her mother Penelope and abuela Lydia wrestle with what it means to be a Catholic family with a gay child.
I told you.
Wait, so you're not okay with it?
No, I am very upset.
Oh, thank God. I mean, thank God, Mommy, that you're so honest with your feelings.
Yeah, I know you don't agree with them because you are so liberal. And I'm just a narrow-minded homo fallopian.
You mean you're homophobic?
Ha! There is the judgment. Look, I know you are cool with this, but you have to understand, I'm a religious woman.
I know, Mommy.
And I'm sorry. I'm sorry, but I have a problem with Elena being gay. It goes against God. Although God did make us in his image, and God doesn't make mistakes, clearly. And when it comes to the gays, the Pope did say, who am I to judge? And the Pope represents God. So what? Am I going to go against the Pope and God? Who the hell do I think I am? Okay. Okay, I'm good.
You just worked that out in 10 seconds?
Si. Because she is my granddaughter, and I love her no matter what. Yeah. So, tell me, when is the parade?
One Day at a Time will begin airing its fourth season on Pop TV in March of 2020.
All right. I love this show so much. When I say it's a beloved show, I suppose I'm maybe speaking for myself more than all of Catholic and queer culture, but it is a beautiful show about you know, just what it means to be a family today when things are changing and you're learning to listen to other perspectives in society. And I really appreciate that this show takes some of these issues, like, you know, racism and homophobia, and instead of just painting the folks who, you know, have some of those positions that are looked down upon in society, instead of actually looking down upon them, like, mm-hmm. lets them voice their opinion a yeah. little bit, and then shows how they can grow and come to a better place. And, like, really treats them with respect. It's not just a matter of, like, putting down somebody who doesn't understand. Like, it's giving them the space and the respect to grow a little bit.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up, because a lot of media, a lot of movies and shows out tend to show the growth and the champion of the white individual who overcomes racism or putting down the other. Without really placing an emphasis on the other,
right.
the minority.
Yeah.
With this show, One Day at a Time, they put the minority family at the forefront and shows their perspective, and then shows, you know, the white individual, the white neighbor Schneider, who I will admit I have a crush on, as an individual who's learning.
Right.
And I don't want to say, as an individual who's learning and deconstructing these societal norms that he or they are so used to.
Right.
So I'd love the show. I'm with you on that. I was a bit weary when you first introduced it to me, but yeah. I'm obsessed.
Any show with a laugh track in the background, I am inherently skeptical of because I hate laugh tracks, but there's so much love that I have for the actual content. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. I feel like this show does it right. This show does it right in the sense of encouraging dialogue when people aren't seeing eye to eye.
Yeah.
There are some moments in the show where it feels very forced, but the outcome is very much worth it to go through that kind of like awkward, oh, this is weird stage.
Right.
So I'm all for the show coming back.
The showrunner, the head writer is a Latinx woman. Like there's a lot to love and to be able to champion and say, I want more of this perspective in what I consume in media. To me, it feels a little bit like the opposite of Schitt's Creek in all the right ways. Like Schitt's Creek is a comedy about a world where these issues don't exist. Yeah. Like there is no racism and there is no homophobia, and it's like and even, you know, like the classism, like there, it's showing like this really wealthy family who's living kind of in a rundown rural town, but they don't resent each other and all that kind of stuff. This show is One Day at a Time. It's more about acknowledging that those things exist, still finding ways to laugh in the middle of it and land a good, you know, punchline and some funny scenes, but also taking seriously the fact that like, but that it does still exist in today's society. Like we're not to the fantasy land yet.
In an interview in the newsletter In Our Time, Jesuit Father James Keenan explained the practical side of some of the cardinal virtues. On the virtue of prudence, he said, "In the Mother Church of the Jesuits in Rome, the Gesu, the very first image you see as you enter, is an enormous statue of prudence in the dome of the church. She is holding her chief icon, a mirror. Prudence holds a mirror because she needs to look and to learn from the past. Only by reviewing what she has done and learned as the result of her decisions can she learn how to make better decisions for the future. Prudence depends on a person reflecting on what he or she has done, whether the decisions prove to be right or wrong. But the mirror also lets you see yourself. And so prudence needs you to examine not only what you decided to do and what you did, but why you decided on this course rather than another. In other words, prudence lets you examine not only your actions, but also your motivations. This is the true examination of conscience."
So I grew up in a Catholic culture where the term virtue was talked about a lot. The idea of leading a good life and what it meant even at a very young age to like form your child to be like in the virtues was this kind of like very overarching Catholic theme that I feel like I don't hear about as much nowadays, but like was an intense part of my growing up. I'm curious, do you know what the cardinal virtues are?
I don't, but I do get what you're getting at about needing to be this poster child of what it is to be a Catholic child or a Catholic family. And that puts a lot of pressure on a family and a child.
Yeah, I was just talking to a friend recently, and he mentioned this intense frustration and pressure that he felt as a father of a kid that was just about to be starting kind of like, I think, second grade or so. And he was struggling with like what it meant to just raise this kid according to like the virtues of the church. Mm-hmm. And like, it wasn't enough to just be like, is he a good kid? Is he getting good grades? Is he getting along with others and just like kind of like some of the basic standards for a kid? Like there were like named virtues like prudence and justice and temperance and stuff that he was like, is my child like meeting those standards and virtues, and how can I bring them about more? I think in that sense, it can be obsessed over a little too much. But yeah. I'm curious, when I read this article in America Magazine, like, is there a way that we can kind of reclaim some of those traditional virtues for the modern world? Like, you know, is there a way that prudence, this idea of, like, I loved this image of Prudence as a statue holding a mirror up and being able to look back at your own life and say, am I meeting, like, how did I come to these decisions that mm-hmm. I made? You know, yeah. like, not just, I want to move on and be better now, but looking back and say, well, what went into those decisions that I made, even some of the bad ones and definitely some of the good ones as well. Like, how did I make a good decision that's gotten me to a better place? That kind of reflectiveness, I feel like I've lost some of that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would be really beautiful to be able to apply it to some of the standards of just like being more tolerant, and being a person that, you know, you can take it even just like today, did I care about the environment? Like, and if I didn't, like, okay, well, what went into that decision? Don't just like berate myself because I didn't recycle mm-hmm. and you know, use a reusable water bottle, but rather when I had the option to, what went into that decision that where I fell short?
I think this is going to be a tough one for a lot of people.
Yeah.
Just as humans, we tend to not look at ourselves and what we have done right or wrong. Yeah. We tend to focus on the rights. It's hard, and for myself too, to understand and take a look back at my day and see what I didn't do well. Yeah, I mean, because just as us as humans, we're full of pride, and it's hard to drop that.
Yeah, it's hard to look back on the areas that we made mistakes, but even the areas that we did well. I have a good friend who he struggles to believe in the idea of altruism, whether or not we can actually do even good things for the right intentions. And one of the, you know, debates we would have all the time was whether or not altruism exists, and thus whether or not, like, we would look at even the times that we would go volunteer and the times that we would make selfless acts, you know, these kind of definitional selfless acts, and have these conversations about, well, like, well, but it did feel good to do mm-hmm. those things. Like, how much was I doing it because it made me feel good to give some money to the homeless guy when I passed him? How much was I doing it because I knew other people were looking? How much was I doing it because I just wanted them to go away? Like, yeah,
or
you can say,
guilt, yeah.
Yeah, how much, you know, yes, you can say I did a good thing, but what were my motivations behind it? So I think that was one of the really neat things in this article that I took away, was just being able to feel that call again to kind of examine some of my motivations in all of my decisions, good and bad.
So is the article saying that prudence is one of the virtues that we need to kind of place more focus on or revert or kind of circle back to?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And so...
And that it's a misunderstood virtue. Like, prudence often gets talked about in the sense of just being like, you made the right decision at the right time. You were prudent.
Oh, okay.
But more so looking at it as, like, you know, that image of the mirror that the statue has of being a reflection on yourself of and what, not just did you make the right decision, but how did you come to the right decision?
Yeah, I feel like the virtues, and your friend who is raising his kid, his son, I feel like the virtues hold a lot of pressure on parenthood and a kid in being Catholic.
Yeah,
Catholic
family. It certainly can.
I feel like it's hard for us to take a step back, to take a look in the mirror and put aside our pride to see our own faults. And I feel like if we are able to do that and acknowledge that we have our own work to do, I feel like that can be a very powerful thing that serves as a sort of a bridge to understanding others. Okay, Pat, so who or what are we toasting this week?
Well, I'm going to toast Rita Moreno. She is the actress who plays Abuelita Lydia in One Day at a Time, and she's the one that you heard in that clip earlier saying that she is now perfectly okay with her gay daughter. And she brings so much life into this role. Like, I get excited every time she comes on scene. She absolutely cracks me up. She reminds me of my own grandmother. And she is just this beautiful and wonderful soul, and I'm so excited that she's getting to play Abuela Lydia one more time.
Toast to Abuelita. Okay, so this week I'm going to do two toasts. First, it's going to be to those who, I would say, don't fall easily to cancel culture and call out culture and create a sense of dialogue with those who don't agree with them.
Okay, sure.
Because I feel like cancel culture, call out culture, whatever you want to call it, has been so rampant in the past few years, since, right. Especially since the new presidency came into term.
Definitely.
And it serves for a really toxic environment, and it's hard to sift through just humanity.
Yeah.
And being able to listen to the other person.
Right.
So, to those who are patient, prudent, and capable of having dialogue, I cheers to you. But my second toast, to those in the community, for the Finding a Fit community, who are currently going through RCIA, I toast to you because it is a very tough process. I did it for 2 years. I wanted to do the fast track, but I was actually pushed to do the longer full liturgical year, and I'm so happy that I did it. I actually did it longer than the liturgical year. You're going to have ups and downs. You're going to have moments where you're thinking, why am I doing this? Especially if you're coming from a secular environment or a secular community.
Yeah.
But it's, for me, it was very worth it. It made the jump and the welcome into the faith and into the home so much better and so much more memorable. So keep at it. Message us, DM us if you have any questions.
If you just need I'm going through this. Our Wednesday night meeting was long and boring and I didn't feel very supported. And I just need to know, why am I still doing this? You know, just need a little word of affirmation to keep going. Yeah, absolutely. Reach out, message us.
Definitely.
We're here. Send us an email.
And we're not going to force you to do it. I know everybody has a different experience with RCIA, especially with those who are in less tolerant areas of the country, but
yeah,
we're here.
If you need a word of encouragement, we are here for you. So cheers to Rita Moreno. Cheers to the tolerant folks who are saying no to cancel culture and to our RCIA babies.
Cheers.
All right, y'all. That is it for us this week on Tabard Inn. You can support the podcast by leaving a review on Apple Podcasts, and you can support us on Patreon at patreon.com/vineandfigco. Thanks for listening, y'all.
Bye.